Imagine there's no America. It's easy if you try. Just a big Muslim mess. No stars and stripes to fly. Imagine all our people living as Islamic slaves. Imagine no rock or country music. Isn't that hard to do? No baseball or hot dogs. As far as freedom goes, we're screwed. Imagine all our pretty girls wearing those awful black sheets. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll wake the heck up. Imagine there are no possessions. That's the Muslim plan. No need for Ford or Chevy. It's a veritable sucker stand. Imagine all our people. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll wake the hell up, and our nation will be strong. You may say I'm a doom and gloomer, but I'm not the only one. Hope someday you wake the hell up, and our nation will be strong.
Hello, welcome to Civilization Jihad Awareness, the show where truth wins every time. I'm sorry for starting a little bit late, but going through some growing pains, so to speak. Take a couple minutes and just trying to catch up here. I just got in the door, so I'm trying to get everything organized, and that's not always the way things should go. But let's talk about where the term Civilization Jihad Awareness came from. It comes from a document called the Explanatory Memorandum, which was discovered in 2004 when a Maryland transit officer observed a woman in a burqa taking pictures of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge support structure. That officer ran the plates and ran the guy and got the driver's license of the guy who was driving the car. They found 93 banker's boxes of hidden documents in a hidden sub-basement of this man, Ismail Elbrasov. And in that one document, the explanatory memorandum, there is a paragraph that pretty much reads the goal, the objective of what the Muslim Brotherhood is doing here in America. It's this. It says this. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the word means. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Without this level of understanding, we are not up to this challenge and have not prepared ourselves for jihad yet. It is a Muslim's destiny to perform jihad and work wherever he is and wherever he lands until the final hour comes. And there is no escape from that destiny except for those who choose to slack. But would the slackers and the mujahideen be equal? So I didn't create this term. The Muslim Brotherhood did. And You sit there and you wonder when you get people who say, well, you're making things up. They, jihad just means struggle. I get upset when I hear that kind of crap. I really do. My answer is pretty simple as to why I get upset. Here it is. I get upset because the truth of the matter is that if you look up and do your own research, you can pick up a book called Reliance the Traveler, which I have right next to me now, and you can simply turn to the section on jihad. And what will you find there? That's the interesting part. If you go to the section on jihad, I believe it's 09.1, I'm turning there right now, you will find a lot on jihad. And trying to get to 09.1, there we go. And I'll read it right to you. This is where the truth comes out. And again, it has to do with doing your own research and stop accepting this namby-pamby crap that people are telling you without doing any of their own research. And I'll say it's crap because I'm tired of reading about it. I am tired of seeing people put in papers and with the name, with a title professor in newspapers. They're saying, well, jihad only means struggle. Since when? What have they read that from? I have real issues with this. I wanted to address this. I've been wanting to work on this for quite a while and write an article on it, but I've got something else I'm working on that's a little bit more intense. And we'll see how things go. But let me share 09.0 right from Reliance of the Traveler. Again, this is a translation of Sharia. Verify Muslim Brotherhood approved document. IIIT, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, says this is an excellent translation. And it says a classic manual of Islamic sacred law in Arabic with facing English text. I mean, this is a very, very important document that every person who wants to do something about the Islamization of this world needs to pick this up in their own language. So let me get into it. It says here, jihad means to war against non-Muslims and is etymologically derived from the word mujahada, signifying warfare to establish the religion. It is the lesser jihad. As for the greater jihad, it is spiritual warfare against the lower self. Why? Which is why the prophet said as he was returning from jihad, we have returned from the lesser jihad to the greater jihad. The scriptural basis, again, I'm still reading from their document. The scriptural basis for jihad prior to scholarly consensus is such Quranic verses as, number one, fighting is prescribed for you, Quran 2:216. Slay them wherever you find them, Quran 4:89. Three, fight the idolaters utterly, Quran 9:36, in such a deed as the one related by Bukhari and Muslim. And this goes on and on. You know what? There's nothing here at all that is scriptural or what otherwise about there's nothing here scriptural or otherwise about a greater jihad. Nothing. Why is that? Because their purpose in telling you what jihad is, that it's a supposed struggle, is again, they're not telling you the entire truth. Let's talk about history. Robert Spencer put out a book, The History of Jihad. You have to pick up that book. It is phenomenal. In fact, the cool thing is, if you read my last book, Why Social Studies Need to Know About What They Need to Know About Islam, you'll find that that book is basically part of that book. In some ways, I go into more detail on some things, and he goes into more detail on other things. It's incredible, the statements that are made in this. And one of the things Spencer does, which I find fascinating in this book, is that he points out that there are many possibles that this guy named Muhammad may not have existed. And that's something to think about. I mean, there's less evidence that he existed than there is evidence there's just not enough. What do we have to prove? We have documents from 200 years after Muhammad to prove that he was alive. What do we have to prove Jesus? We have literally hundreds of thousands of documents we have Roman documents, we have Jewish documents, but Islam can't stand up to that same scrutiny. There is nothing. I mean, Spencer also goes into the argument in the book, which kind of surprised me again, he goes in to talk about there's no evidence that Mecca was there during the time period that they're talking about. That was a surprise for me. I didn't know what to think when I'd already read his other book that talks about this, but again, it was a surprise to see that in this book. And he presents it concisely. He's not going to make you confused or anything. It's one of the reasons why I like his work. And I do want to get into the news today. There's an awful, awful lot of it. And I do want to tell you that I don't have it as organized as I usually do because I just had to run in the door. So I apologize for that. Do have an awful, awful lot of news. And I want to come back and talk about, before I get into that one more time, I want to talk about this thing called the Hijra, because this is all important, this concept of the Hijra. We have to start paying attention to this. Now, I'm going to put in the chat room my last thing on the Hijra. You can find it on YouTube or you can find it on my blog. I'm telling you, you have to go back and look at this document. It's extremely important that you do. Why am I saying that? Because what's here, wow, what's here is so important that it should blow your mind. Because this is the stuff that's affecting. Oh, can you guys hear me or not? I'm just seeing somewhere says she can't hear me. Hopefully you can hear me. Hit refresh, Summer. And sometimes I have to hit refresh a couple times. So let's see. Somebody can tell her that, please. I'm going to just tease. I want you to start thinking about, you know, 10 years ago, what was your part of the world like? I do know that my part has become intensely, I'd say it's gone up 300 to 500% Islamic, if not 1,000%. We've gone from having, you know, very rarely seen somebody with a hijab to every day I take a bus, I see them every day. I see ladies wearing full burqas, wearing the whole niqab. I mean, that stuff still blows my mind to think that in Rochester, New York, you can find something like that. That's a mind number, but that's the stuff I'm seeing now. So what is a Hijra? Hijra is the word for migration, and it is basically a secret doctrine. They don't talk about it. They don't get into it. There's reasons they don't. They don't want you to know certain things, and this is where things get, and it's I want you to think about this. I mean, my goal right now is to start when I've got this project done I'm working on. I want to go back into working on the book on the history of the Hijra, and I'm ready to do that. I've got one project yet to go, and we're going to start talking, you know, knocking out the Hijra. I put up a site on Patreon. If they knocked out Robert Spencer, let's see if they'll knock me out for daring to pretty much. I mean, he's doing a radio. He was trying to get one up for a radio or video thing. I feel sorry that he got stabbed in the back, basically, by MasterCard. And now it's not even just MasterCard, there's other agencies. I think Robert Spencer has a court case to sue Southern Poverty Law Center for millions. Why? Because they're denying him, without basis of any factual information, income. And I think it's time that becomes a huge public lawsuit against Southern Poverty Law Center, where he settles for a couple million. And that's what he needs to do, because the stuff that's happening as a result of the Southern Poverty Law Center is just disgusting. And I hope somebody else can tell him that. I'm just mind blown. So if you're into supporting my work, there's a place on Patreon now. If you look for Paul Sutliff, Civilization Jihad Awareness, you'll find something there. Okay, going on. Still don't have sound. Oh, boy, refresh. Boy, I'm hoping everybody can anybody hear me? I'm just asking that. Can anybody hear me? Tell me. Somebody tell me in the chat room you can hear me. Can you hear me? Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. With all this talking. Oh, good. Okay, going on. I want to get into the news because, again, everything you're going to hear that's related in this news today is pretty much related to the concept of migration, Islamic migration. Again, I don't have my news as organized as I usually do, but you're going to be stuck with it, and that's just the way life is. Today in the Washington Post, we have not today's article, but it's one of the last ones up. Man stabs to death his sister and mother in Paris suburb. Authorities doubt ISIS claim. Now, attention, this was published today, and I'm just going to put the link in the chat room, and oh my gosh, this stuff is just mind-numbing when you start looking at it. To think that this stuff is happening, it's mind-numbing. So, again, I put the link in the chat room, and I'm just going to start reading. This comes written by Rick Nowak on August 23rd. A man stabbed to death his sister and mother Thursday morning in a suburb of west of Paris and seriously injured at least one more person. Although the Islamic State claimed the incident, authorities are not calling it an act of terrorism. French Interior Minister Gerard Collomb described the man as a criminal who had significant psychiatric problems. Sounds like, you know, that for some reason the press thinks that jihad and psychiatric disability go together. Could it be that jihad is prescribed for you under Islam? So it could be a prescribed mental illness for Muslims? Is that what we're saying? I have some serious issues. These people who make these statements have never read Reliance of the Traveler. They've done no research on Islam. So I have serious issues with them. This goes on. It says that there was, again, they said not likely an act of terrorism. It's more a man who was disturbed than someone responding to orders from a terrorist organization. Well, again, to say that responding to orders, this is where they're making mistakes. And this is obvious mistakes. ISIS as an organization is pretty dead. Are they giving orders to people? Well, they're telling people, you know, how to commit acts of terrorism. They're put out things on how to be a lone wolf, how to act on your own. Are they giving orders? And the answer is no. Can they still give orders to other people, let's say in terror cells? Yes. We're not finding very many of those anymore because we've done an awful lot around the world to take those on. But again, they're trying to mix things up. So you don't listen to the truth. This article goes on. It was more a man who was disturbed than someone responding to orders. He told the reporters in the incident at the suburb of Trapez. The attacker was killed by police after he came out of his mother's house wielding a knife and ignored shouted warnings. Colomb added, an investigation into his motives is still underway. The Islamic State's Amaq News Agency claimed responsibility for the attack, writing without evidence that the attacker was one of the fighters for the Islamic State. This is where it gets interesting. Can they verify this man at one time was in Iraq or Syria fighting for ISIS? I mean, that's what they're saying. It's what it sounds like what they're saying. Or are they just saying a fighter for ISIS is anybody who is on an act of jihad? That's what you have to wonder. So what do they mean by a fighter? This goes on. It asserts the attack was carried out in response to calls to target the coalition, referring to the countries fighting the Islamic State. Located about 16 miles from the center of Paris, Trappist has long been a recruitment ground for supporters of the Islamic State and other militant groups. French media reported that the man had been on the country's national security watch list. So why not deport? Come on. They've had him on. So they're telling me they watched him daily for 2 years? I doubt it. This is just why allow him to stay in the country? Again, this is stuff, it's not just stuff France is doing, it's stuff that we're doing here still in the United States. if we don't consider a alien or a former refugee or we don't consider them safe, we need to deport, period. Goes on. Islamic State's claim Thursday was issued before authorities confirmed that the attacker's two victims were his relatives. If no terrorism link is found, it would fit into a string of misleading claims issued by the Amaq agency, as the Islamic State has faced significant setbacks over the last 2 years, losing most of the territory it previously held. The attack came just hours after the Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi issued his first message in almost a year to mark the Islamic Eid al-Adha. He encouraged his followers to carry out lone wolf attacks in Europe, North America, and to stab their bodies. France has been hit by a string of high-profile terrorist attacks, including a shooting at the offices of prominent satirical magazine and a rampage through Paris in November 2015. A total of 230 people have been killed in France in the past 3 years in terror attacks, most of which were carried out by French or other European nationals inspired by the Islamic State. Well, that's partially true. These people they consider were French were Islamic converts, and the vast majority were not French. They were refugees that had become naturalized, refugees is the wrong word. They were migrants, economic migrants. Now, again, we're using the term migrant, which would make they were on a hijra to France, and they committed these acts. You can find lists of terror attacks, and you can find those same lists line up next to where the people are, their country of origin. That will hit you. And it's mind-numbing where they're all coming from. And one of the things that was just out this week was an article on how the majority of the people who have committed these crimes of terrorism, the United Kingdom, the vast majority of them have come from Pakistan. Now, that's an actual study that just came out, I think it was this past week. And I believe I mentioned it last week also. So, again, there's an awful, awful lot of news going on. We have an article from Express. Now, this article is mine number two. There was a car explosion with gas canisters and plowed into a town hall in the Netherlands. Now, I believe this was an act of terror. This is just mind-numbing. Definitely I'll talk with you later, Ann. I'm sorry I can't do that right now. Get back to that article. I'm sorry. Explosion in the Netherlands. Now, I was in Sweden, and I can tell you there's a huge – they're telling everybody else that there's this huge problem with how the Muslims are treating the police. We've had several attacks on police stations in Northern Europe. In Northern Europe, hear me. I'm not just saying in one country versus another. Several attacks on police stations. This is an attack. This is right from express.co.uk. Explosion is car packed with car gas canisters, plows into town hall in the Netherlands by Paul Withers. And this again was published August 22nd. A car packed with gas canisters is plowed into the town hall of Lingewaard in the Netherlands, with one exploding and killing the driver. Suicide terrorist. Any surprise? What do you think? Is it a Muslim? A fire brigade spokesman told Dutch broadcasters NOS the killed motorist was found in the vicinity of the car. The resulting fire caused major damage to the town hall located in Garderland village of Bemmel. The spokesperson told newspaper AD that police had received a threat that could be linked to the incident. But Lingewaard mayor, Marianne Schumann, told the newspaper that the news of the threat surprised her. She said, "I will have to wait for the police investigation. What I find awful is that someone was killed. My thoughts go to the family. Now, again, we're talking about, if you look at what the suicide attacks are actually talked about, I mean, and with the vehicular attacks on people versus things, in one of the magazines, whether it's the ISIS one or the Al-Qaeda one, there is a description about what you can do to your car to make it cause more damage, talking about attacking things. You know, they do talk about, you know, loading it with propane gas. So this car was filled with propane gas tanks, and this explosion happened. It says, due to the damage, a town hall, which is without power, will remain closed to the public for the remainder. This is of yesterday. Okay. Again, this was an attack yesterday. So these are happening, still happening. Now, what kills me in the midst of this, you have reports from in American media claiming that this is what gets me. They're making claims that the acts of terrorism are going down. Well, what are they defining as an act of terrorism? So they're not attacking buildings with planes right now. Yeah, that's going down. Thank God it's going down. Are they including the rapes? Are they including the honor killings? Are they including, I mean, there's so much more that goes on than just what they're defining. And this is what it gets into trouble, what's being defined as terrorism. I have another article to share. This one really pissed me off. I don't like to this article comes from the Daily Caller. And I have to tell you, when I put this up on Facebook, they blocked it. They did not. They actually blocked the article. I was amazed. They said, well, it's spam. I'm like, excuse me? So I posted it again, and they allowed it. I says, no, it's not spam. Now, why is this article hit me? This is a judge gives no jail time. Imran Awan, attorney claims he was building women's shelter. Now, this is the IT staffer that worked for Deborah. Gotta get her name right. This is one of the IT staffers, and it's just mind-numbing because they took stuff and had access to stuff they had no business doing. It's not just Imran. This guy is two or three others that were involved, his family involved in this. And they took him to court, and they didn't give him any jail time. Why? The truth of the matter is they didn't give him jail time because it makes Debbie Wasserman Schultz look like an idiot. That's what it comes down to. But this is the article by the Daily Caller. And Luke Rosiak deserves credit for this, published August 21st. He wrote, a federal judge declined to give jail time to former Democratic IT aide Imran Awan Tuesday, saying he was suffered enough at the hands of politicians at the highest levels of government. In addition, the Department of Justice said it did not find any evidence that supported criminal charges. Imran choked back tears, saying, we want to thank the prosecution, the FBI, and the Capitol Police. So he's thanking people for prosecuting him. What's he really thanking them for? Not doing their job? Imran choked back. This just mind-numbing. Judge Tanya Chutkan gave Imran 3 months of supervised release. So I want you guys to think about this. Would you put someone on supervised release after they committed an act of treason? Because that's what was committed. And nobody charged him with it, of course. They're too afraid to place people on the charge of treason. Why? I have no idea. What was he doing? He was taking an action that would slow down government. He was possibly sharing what he was learning with the Pakistani police, the Pakistani government. Okay, and this is all stuff that's pretty much been in the news, and yet this lady, I don't understand it. Again, this story is at odds with 2009 Pakistani newspaper article, police reports and lawsuits in Pakistan as well as interviews. Those allege Imran, in Pakistan they write, they allege the Imran tried to cut of a fraud flagged plagued real estate deal and secured a massive inheritance in the form of a major real estate deal. Again, I mean, they're saying he's trying to build a women's shelter. That's not accurate. Okay. The Pakistani government knows it. The Pakistani newspapers know it. But for some reason, our judge doesn't know it. But did the prosecution not present this material? Again, it's public information. This article goes on. It's talking about this massive inheritance in the form of a major real estate complex known as a colony. A dozen farmers accused Imran and his father of stealing their land and subdividing it to build the development. The 2009 article said the Imran used political muscle stemming from his job in Congress to attempt to frame his alleged victims. Later, Faisalabad Agricultural University faculty apparently paid for some of those plots, but said that they too were ripped off. Excuse me, Dr. Zafar Iqbal, a university professor and a president of the faculty association, told the DCNF that Imran and his father refused to turn over the deeds. And then in January 2017, Imran cautioned them that he has got powerful political connections. Ooh, is that something he should be doing? Is that something he should be saying? This is insane. This is insane. Yes, Flycatch, I did want to come back. I do want to come back and mention Flycatch is exactly right, that these UK articles are calling the Muslims, a lot of them, they're calling them Asians. They're not saying the word Muslim. They refuse to say that. They refuse to even say Pakistan in most articles until this past week. Now, with this past week's government study that was released that shows the vast majority of those committing acts of terrorism, and that's in Eurojihad too, the book Eurojihad, showing that the vast majority are people from Pakistan who have committed these acts of terror, will they improve? Will they do something? Now, going back into this article, sorry about that, guys. Getting easily distracted today. This goes on and on about the land deal that they say they're going to build a school for orphans, a mosque for a village to pray in. My bet is it still will never, ever be done. All this, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars they took as IT professionals working in Congress for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And there's just too much here that's not said, not discussed. And I credit Luke for trying to do his best. But if you were to cover this entire piece, it would be about 6 or 7 pages long. And he did the best he could with the little space he's allowed. It was a good article. Going on, next article. How about this one? Let's talk about Iran and some of the things we're going to be talking about with Iran. Well, there's a couple ones. We keep talking about how President Obama really screwed things up with his nuke deal with them, how he's caused damage even into today with that nuke deal. And President Trump, how righteously he's negated that deal. So how do these people treat other religions? Now, I keep getting told Islam is a religion of peace. So keep that in mind when you hear this headline. This comes from Christian Post. Now, how do they treat other religions? Let's just talk Iran today. And posting this article in. Ooh. Bigfoot, you caught a new one, huh? Might be on my list. Okay. Getting into the Iran. Sentences 12 Christians to year in prison for house church worship. And evangelism. This is by Samuel Smith, written on August 21st. And get to the page. Okay. An Iranian court has sentenced 12 Christians to 1 year in prison for holding worship meetings and evangelizing, crimes that Iran considers to be propaganda activities. Iranian Christian news agency Mohabbat News reports that a Christian convert known as Payam Karaman and 11 other Christians who were arrested in Bushehr in April 2015, again, arrested in April 2015, that's 2 years ago, sentenced for the crime of promoting what the Islamic authorities call Zionist propaganda that goes against the Islamic Republic Shia Muslim-controlled system. Okay, they're charged for a year in prison. They've been in jail 2 years. So does that mean 3 years is a prison sentence, or can they go? Think about that. Karaman told the news outlet that he and actually have been in prison. Yeah, hey, this is 3 years, so it's a 4 year prison sentence. See how good my math is. Karam told the news outlet that he and others were accused of the crimes because they held house worship meetings, evangelized, and invited others to accept Christ as their savior. Additionally, the Christians were charged with inclination to the land of Christianity. The verdict was handed down by the Islamic Revolutionary Court of Bushehr, headed by Judge Abbas Asghari. The two others were sentenced along with them. Now, again, this is insane. Karam explained that in the state, pressure against him beginning as early as 2012, when he was repeatedly summoned to the Office of Police Monitory, a public place in Bushehr, Karam said that he was interrogated about his evangelism and communications outside the country. Karaman stated that interrogators wanted a confession that he was speaking abroad to Americans, Britons, or Israelis. I always insisted on the belief in Christianity for myself and not for promotion of Christianity. Karaman was quoted as saying, because I had a boutique shop in Bushehr, a number of officers, families, members in the office knew me and formed a heavy sentence against me. And the case, which was under investigation by intelligence officers, I thought it was just an empty threat, but unfortunately became a serious one in one or two years later. Now, again, this has been going on. He's been home. Okay, they stormed his home with a warrant on April 7th, 2015. Searching for about 2 hours, they seized his computer, cell phone, CDs, books, and memory cards. This is how they treat people that aren't Muslim. They're upset at the fact that they would share their God. Oh, my gosh. Why? Because their God is so small. That's what it comes down to. Who has the bigger God? Well, this is sad. And these people are in jail for believing. And they're supposed to, according to Christianity, they're supposed to count that as something to be thankful for. At the same time, we need to stand up for them. Contact your State Department officials. Advocate for them. Remember, I mean, Trump has done some things to get people out of, he got people out of Korea. His influence has weight. The question is, what can he do and what can't he do? So we'll just have to, put some hope there. Here's another article. Now, this is an interesting article because where it comes from. And I don't usually get articles from Pakistan, but I first saw this on Jihad Watch, and I found it very interesting. So let me just push this one into the chat room. Holy cow. And, oh, wow. Some other people putting articles in. I missed these. I don't think I got that one. I'll take a look at that in a minute. Flycatch, thank you. All right. So, Lahore, young Christian killed over unpaid loan. Now, this is August 21st, and it was written by Shafiq Kokar. Vicky Masi worked as a courier at the Lahore High Court. He leaves his wife and three children and his brother. The police are conniving with the murderers, members of the rich criminal families. Now, that's a claim made by Shafiq Kokar. Now, I'd be scared if I was him, even if he's writing about it. That's the first sentence on there. A young 35-year-old Christian was killed in Lahore by some acquaintances on the day of his wedding anniversary. His name was Vicky Masi. He was the son of Salim Masi. Together with his wife and three children, the oldest only six, he lived in Mazipura, Paris, attended the Galilee Church in Lahore. For 10 years, he worked as a courier at the High Court of the City. Speaking to Asian News, Iftikhar Salim, the victim's younger brother, declared the future of his children is forever ruined by these inhuman culprits. We'll never forgive them. The family blames the police for delayed investigation. the killers were Muslims. So basically they're saying nothing's going to happen to them because they're Muslim. And this is happening. It's all around the world. Under Sharia, and you can, again, you can check in Reliance on the Traveler, you are allowed to kill non-Muslims. You cannot be punished for killing non-Muslims. So Pakistan, you have to understand, Pakistan's government is in line, is as much in line with Sharia as it can be. They want to be. I mean, in their constitutions, they'll say these things. So if you understand that, now you understand why they will not punish a Muslim for killing a non-Muslim, because it's in Sharia. This is just, I mean, you've got to grasp some of these things. As much as they're upsetting, they actually are out there. They're actually said, mind-numbing. Yes, I am going to get to this article on the Catalan knife attack. And this is, this is one of the articles I was going to pull up. So I'll just get into that. The Catalan police are treating a knife attack in which assailant was shot as terrorism. This is in elpais.com and by Jesus Garcia and Rebecca Carranco. And this is published August 20th. A female officer from Catalan Regional Police force shot a man dead at around 6 a.m. Monday morning after he entered a police station on Cornella de, I cannot say that, Llobregat, which is basically Barcelona, carrying a knife and shouting, Allah Akbar, Allah is great, Allah is the greatest. The man named as Abdel Uhab Taib was intending to attack the officers, according to a statement published by the police on Twitter. The man reportedly lived around 150 meters from the police station and the Masas de Esquadra, as the regional force is known, have been searching his house today. After initially announcing that all lines of inquiry would be open, the Masas announced around midday on Monday that the incident was being treated as a terrorist attack. These are extremely serious facts, said Senor Masas Police Chief Rafael Combs on Monday. It was undeniably an attack against a police officer, adding the chief, who is in charge of tackling terrorism and organized crime. The Masas have convened a joint commission this afternoon with the National Police and Civil Guard in order to pool all available information. It's just mind-numbing. Yes, they're saying it's an act of terror. So let's talk about what's happening in an act of terror. This was an act of terror. It was an act against the police. It was an act against the country. Is this treason? Again, what they're doing is swearing allegiance to Allah and then running forward to kill non-Muslims. Now, is this an act of treason? Are they swearing allegiance to another? And yes, they are. Are they swearing allegiance to another country? Huh, something to think about. If they consider Islam a separate entity, a political entity, yes, they are. And that's where things get interesting, because Islam does not consider itself a religion. It considers itself more, an entire way of life. So in that sense, it is also a political entity. So could swearing to Islam be considered an act of treason? Now, that's where you have to start thinking about, what does Islam consider itself? Now, this is stuff to think about and contemplate, and it's stuff congressional congressmen and bill writers on counterterrorism and terrorism should be thinking about. It's mind-numbing. All this stuff is mind-numbing. Going on, I have my next article comes from this one I did want to get into, and I have to say this was a surprise article for me. I picked this one up, and it comes from Mateen Elas, WordPress.com, and the author's name unfortunately is not present, but let me say this article again is another must read. And I'm going to post this right in here. I was highly impressed reading this, and I shared this on all the forums. I was really, really impressed. The topic here, Islamic terrorism will end when Islam has conquered the world. Now, again, the purpose of Hijra, if the purpose of Hijra, migration, is to enable jihad, to make jihad work better, then we're in trouble because we're saying we're not stopping the Hijra. We're allowing it to continue to flow. And whatever country we're in today, no one has put a stop on Islamic migration, not to date, not even this country. Trump put a stop on only certain countries from coming. He did not put a full stop on Islamic migration. We may have to have that happen in order to be safe. Now, this was written August 22nd, and just as something to think about. He starts out, will Islamic terrorism end anytime soon? No. Here's why. One, Allah commands his followers to fight until the world is subdued under Islam. Two, he promises them victory with supernatural help, even when the odds are stacked against them. Three, he lures jihadis with visions of eternal rewards, replete with virgins galore and sensual pleasures beyond measure. He threatens the punishment of hellfire for Muslims who don't walk the talk, who claim to be faithful but shirk from fighting and dying for Allah. He reassures Muslims that the kuffar deserve death because they will roast in hell for eternity, hated by Allah. Muslims, therefore, should have no pangs of conscience for dispatching them to their eternal destiny post-haste. One would think, in light of this, that Muslim armies would be rising up all over the world, trusting in the promises of Allah, their God, to engage and defeat the forces of the infidel West, as well as the communist world. The countries of God in Central South America, after all, the Quran, this is Muhammad's inerrant word or Allah's inerrant word, both, I guess. This is what it says from Allah's, Allah says, O prophet, urge the believers to battle. If there are among you 20 who are steadfast, they will overcome 200. And if there are among you 100 who are steadfast, they will overcome 1,000 of those who have disbelieved, because they are a people who do not understand. That's from the Quran, chapter 8, 65. In the next verse, which would be 866, Allah ratchets down the odds, recognizing that Muslims are weak, even with his angelic help. Wait. That would mean he's not a god if he's an angel, right? Interesting. Okay. His angelic help. Again, the words are not Muslims again, but okay. Now, here's a quote. This is from Quran 8:66. Now, Allah has lightened the hardship for you, and he knows that among you is weakness. So if there are from you 100 who are steadfast, they will overcome 200. And if there are from among you 1,000, they will overcome 2,000 by permission of Allah, and Allah is with the steadfast. So the weak, again, this is something to think about, the weak are not steadfast in his mind. So you can't, again, they're talking about physical. So that's an interesting thing to think about. Their God measures people by how strong they are physically, not how strong they are spiritually. Something to think about. Nevertheless, the Muslims are to fight under Muhammad and his generals, expecting victory even against the stronger forces. Again, this article goes on and on. It's about 4 pages long, I think, if you were to print it out. It's really well done, and I think it deserves a good reading. But, again, go through it. Get a good look at it. This is something, again, it's an article I recommend. So take your time. Go through this one. And going on, this article, whenever I see a California university come up and talking about anti-Semitism, I just laugh now because I'm getting used to seeing it every time. I'm ashamed when I see it in New York State, in my state. I really am. And we're seeing it in New York State, but it's almost hilariously part of normal college culture in California. Like, that's an acceptable way to be. So this article comes from the Allgemeiner. Again, I'll put this in the chat room. And I do want to point this out, that what we're talking here about, I believe, is SJP and a few other things. We have to pay attention to what's happening. And this is where things get scary. Now, this article, again, Allgemeiner, it's by Shiri Moshe, one of my favorite writers, August 22nd. UCLA to host student conference that advocates destruction of Jewish self-determination. So my thoughts here, while we read this article, if you have time, look up UCLA. Find that, I mean, again, look at this article, find UCLA, write trustees. Why do I say write to the Board of Trustees? Or look up who gives them donations and write to them saying, I didn't know you support anti-Semitism. That's what we need to start saying. So you support anti-Semitism. Is that what you're the one having this conference, right? So let me tell you what this is. The National Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, announced on Sunday that it will host its 8th annual conference at the University of California, Los Angeles, that's UCLA, people, drawing concerns from some members of the school's pro-Israeli community. The event, based on the theme of resistance in the face of adversity, will take place from November 16th to the 18th. In a note explaining the conference's goals, National SJP and its chapter at UCLA defines Zionism a diverse national liberation movement that supports the Jewish people's right to self-determination in their historic homeland as, now this is what they define it as, ethnic cleansing, destruction, mass expulsion, apartheid, and death. Termination is ethnic cleansing. You know, if you talk to Muslims in Israel that actually live, don't live in Gaza, they'll tell you it's safer to live in Israel than it is to live in Gaza. They'll tell you it's safer to live in Israel than it is to live in other areas where Muslims live. Why is that? Because of one major thing. Israelis value all life, not just themselves. Going on. Prominent Jewish groups like the World Jewish Congress, the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, whose umbrella includes the nation's principal bodies of Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox Judaism, have in the past described Zionism as a long-standing and sincerely held religious belief central to the Jewish religion. The conference will seek to remind students that Zionism is not an insurmountable force. The organizers explained, the reason we can have hope is that Zionism is a human ideology and a set of laws that have been challenged and can be destroyed. Participants, this is just insane. It goes on, particularly through local campaigns with clear targets. Scary. Workshops at the event will enable students to pick up the skills necessary for coalition building, fundraising, and combating normalization, often defined as interactions between Palestinians and Israelis that may include the legitimization of Zionism, even in the context of Israeli-Palestinian reconciliation work. The conference will also help build regional momentum in the West Coast, as well as examine how successful diversity resolutions targeting Israel have recently been implemented in the UC system in order to serve as a model for SJP charters. This is what they're promoting as BDS. What they do, they boycott, divest, and sanctions against Israel. This is just, if you think about this in the long run, the real Israel hurts financially. Well, again, all that, a lot of what they do for Gaza and Golan Heights, a lot of what they do for those areas that people call themselves Palestinians in, again, you can't be Palestinian without being Jewish. Let's think about that, because the truth of the matter is that to be a Palestinian, it means that you are Jewish. So and this is just historically accurate, because who were the Palestinians? Where were they originally? The name originally came from the Romans trying to insult the Jews, and they were talking about Philistines. This was supposed to be the land of the Philistines. The humorous part of this is that there is no P in Arabic, no P sound. So they call themselves Philistines. Philistines. That sounds kind of disgusting when you think about it, because a phallus, it is kind of disgusting when you think about it. Holy cow. So going on, if you all know what a phallus is and they're calling themselves Philistines, holy cow. Something to think about and laugh about. Oh, wow. That one never ceases to get me. UCLA. This incident, this is just all this BDS stuff that comes from SJP. You cannot trust SJP. You cannot trust them. There's an article out this week by Canary Mission, which I hope to get to, and scrolling down into my stories, we'll get into that. Here's another one I did want to pull up. This one is by memory.org. If you have extra money floating around and you can share, I don't mind. You can always throw it my way, and you can always put it into places like memory.org. Memory.org is a Middle East Media Research Institute. I love it. Go there, subscribe to them. August 22nd. Of 2018, they put this out. Educational materials used in Houthi summer camps include calls of death to curse the Jews. Now, let's talk about where this is. The Yemeni website Al-Aisima Online reports that the Houthis are taking advantage of the summer vacation to recruit youth to fight in their militias. To this end, they have established summer camps in Sana'a and other areas under their control, as a substitute for the camps supervised by Yemen's Youth and Sports Ministry, which stopped operating after the Houthi coup. The website stated further that the special educational materials have been printed for use in the camps and presented passages for some of them, which include invectives against the United States, the Jews, and Israel. It should be noted that Houthis admitted that they have changed the school curriculum in the area under their control. So I say, take a good look at this. In the reading and writing exercise, they have death to America, death to Israel. So here's one of the things. They're actually going to have to read this and write it. Here's another reading exercise. We shall not succumb to America. It will surely perish today. That's a reading exercise. Here's what it says. The poem reads, "Ali alone is our patron, and pure descendants of the prophet. We are men always willing to sacrifice our souls for our Lord, the Lord of worlds. Yes, let the entire world hear. We shall sacrifice our souls to live in honor. We have risked our lives for Allah's religion so that men in faith can live upon the earth. Tell the enemies about us. We shall continue to be jihad fighters as they have become accustomed to seeing. We say to every stubborn tyrant, our Lord will keep us from living in a state of surrender. We Husseinis do not fear Yazid and shall not bow our heads before America. Tell America we shall remain armed from head to toe. We are jihad fighters. We say Allah Akbar. America will surely perish today. We wish Israel and the imperialists death and an afterlife in hell. Every Zionist and hope he remains despised and crowd and humiliated ever." All this stuff, I mean, again, you can read this. The pictures are on memory.org. I recommend going there. They translate this stuff into English, and the government uses this site too. So, again, this is one of those sites you can trust. They do outstanding work, and, again, outstanding stuff they reveal. Going on, my next article. Now, I'm not going to be able to get into the majority of this one, but I do want to share this one. This comes from the Long War Journal. Now, if you know me, you know I do an awful lot of reading, and this was a huge piece. And I think it's an actually incredibly important piece that actually needs to be looked at more. Long War Journal published an article by Thomas Jocelyn, and it's called Islamic State Video Purportedly Shows Youths Responsible for Attacks in Chechnya. So if you're unfamiliar with what happened in Chechnya, there were, I believe, five attacks, and they're pretty much coordinated. And this is, they were against the police and others. So let me get into this article. The Islamic State's Amaq news agency has released a video showing four young males, including a boy and three other children or teenagers, who were allegedly responsible for terrorist attacks in Chechnya yesterday. The self-declared caliphate previously claimed responsibility for the incidents, which targeted police forces. Amaq's video is intended to underscore the Islamic State's loyalists, albeit children or teenagers were responsible. FDD's Long War Journal cannot independently confirm that the four males seen in the video were responsible for the operations in Chechnya. But the video is similar to a string of other short productions released by the Islamic State since mid-2016. In addition, Chechen authorities have said that all four of the assailants were younger than 17, with the youngest being just 11 years old. Now, if you look at this, these pictures on this site, that child could be, the younger one could be 11 years old. The ages are consistent with the four males who swear allegiance in the Amaq's footage. The youngest of them holds a smartphone with it, and take a look at the picture. You'll see this. There are only sketchy details regarding what transpired in Chechnya. According to Russian news agency TASS, at least one police officer was killed and several others were wounded during three attacks. One or two of the assailants used their vehicle, a Mercedes, to run over a policeman in Grozny. Two others, armed with knives, assaulted police in the town of Shali. And at least one member of the terror team attempted to blow himself up at a police checkpoint in the village of Meskeryurt. Chechen authorities also quickly blamed the Islamic State's special programs to brainwash teenagers for their raids. In addition to its online efforts, the Islamic State has a Cubs of the Caliphate program that was established to indoctrinate children in the so-called caliphate ideology. The program has operated in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and likely elsewhere. Cubs of the Caliphate effort has created additional problems for counterterrorism authorities, who now have to worry about that the jihadists will use children in attacks inside Europe. Well, you think they did it? They've done it in every country that they do it in Palestine. This is just it's not something new. It's historical too. You can go back and you can hear about when the Palestinians are attacking, the people calling themselves Palestinians are attacking the Jews, and they have children in front of them so that the Israelis won't shoot them. That is, they have video of it this year. Some reporters actually caught that on video. I've seen at least one or two two videos of it. I've seen several hundred articles of it. And you sit there and you see this stuff. You have to question, what kind of a God are they serving that you would use a child as armor? My God's too big for that. Definitely too big. Oh my gosh. Mind-numbing stuff. Wow. I'd say go and read this article. You're going to find a ton of material in here. This writer is outstanding. I think what gets you also, though, but when you look at this article, the amount of pictures in it, and they, like they say, a picture's worth a thousand words. Some of these pictures are just like that. You have to pay attention to what's happening around you, and this guy definitely has done that. Going on, again, that article is a mind number, and it's something that really needs to be read. Now, I found another article which was, to me, of great interest. I'm not a big fan of some news sites. This one I just don't use very often. This comes from Straits Times, and I'm going to post it right in the chat room real quick. And here we go. Now, Straits Times, and get back to the article, and it's hiding on me. Got to get the advertisement out of the way. Sorry. Okay. Germany detains Russian man. Again, Europeans don't want to say the word Muslim. They don't want to say the word Middle Eastern. They don't want to say the term Islamic, talking about terrorism. So this is published August 22nd. German police on Wednesday detained a Russian man. Again, wait to hear his name. And tell me if you think his name sounds Russian. Detained a Russian man suspected of planning a bomb attack in Germany after turning to radical Islam, prosecutors said. Police said the 31-year-old suspect, named as Magomed Ali C., under German privacy rules, had acted collectively with a French national, Clement B., who was detained in Marseille, France, in April of last year. Magomed Ali C., arrested in a raid on his apartment in Berlin, had stored large quantities of the explosive triacetone, triperoxide, TATP, in October 2016. An unstoppable homemade explosive, TATP, has been used by militants in several attacks in Western Europe, including in Manchester, Britain, in May of last year, Brussels in 2016, Paris in 2015, the Vice, and an unsuspected location in Germany to kill and injure a maximum amount of people. It's just insane. The two Frenchmen had met while sharing a cell in prison and were known to police as having turned to radical Islam, French prosecutors said last year. German police took measures in October 2016. Again, think about this. The French are involved. The Germans are involved. They're calling this guy a Russian. What's his name? Magomed Ali. What does he sound like? Is he Russian? Chechen? Is he from a country that Russia took over as the Soviet Union, and which would make him Muslim? Isn't that what it sounds like? Does he sound Russian? And the answer is no. He definitely sounds Middle Eastern. Why can't they tell the truth? Newspapers are so afraid of truth. It's mind-numbing. Why can't they just tell the truth? Unbelievable. Why? Because you might learn that jihad is actually dangerous. How about this one? Now, this is kind of an old news story. At the same time, it's an update. And I'm going to put this one out there. I usually don't like to rehash old stories just because there's so much new. But, Bigfoot put it in the art. Let me just take a quick look at this one. And we have Bigfoot put in an article out there on the same issue. Germany detains man suspected of planning terror attack. Again, they say 31-year-old Russian citizen. They're calling him a Russian national. My question is, his name is Middle Eastern. Is he a convert? Is he Middle Eastern looking? Is he maybe he was one of those people from Syria that came and got their refugee status and then came to Germany. That would not surprise me because that stuff is happening. I mean, they're going from one country to another as how they see fit. So Russian national, and I don't think the Russians are going to like that either. If you're going to start, they'll be more careful. They will. How about this one, though? On this article on the U.S., a soldier to plead guilty to trying to help Islamic State terrorist group. So what he's pleading guilty to, people, is treason. Think about this. He pled guilty to trying to help the Islamic State terrorist group. Think about it. What does treason mean? Anybody have a clue? Well, I've written an article on a long, long time ago, and I'm just going to pull up the word treason and get the definition for you. Now, I want you to think about this. What does treason mean? And if we look at what treason means, we look at this definition, it's all important in dealing with this. And let me get there. We have to actually look at the word treason. And I don't have it. Here we go. No, I don't have it, unfortunately. I thought I had it. Bummer. Sorry. Anybody finds that link on treason? Now, let's think. The word treason, if you just type in treason in Google, let's see what comes up. We have, okay, the crime of betraying one's country, especially by attempting to kill the sovereign or overthrow the government. But if you look it up as law, that's where things get interesting. Now, 18 U.S. Code 2381, paragraph 2381. Whoever allowing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title but not less than $10,000. Okay, this person needs to be fined, charged with treason. This is what it's got to be done. Suffer death. I don't remember them adding, a prison term to this. That's got to be relatively new. Scary. Flycatch says, Muslim population in Russia is 9,400,000. Again, but are these the ones who look like Caucasians? Like they live in the Caucasus Mountains? They're probably not. These are, again, when Russia expanded as the Soviet Union and what it took over, that's where I think that we're really talking about. I'll learn a little bit more as I do more research on the Hijra. And that, to me, is, I think that's what we need to work on. So this stuff can be so mind-numbing. Going back, this U.S. soldier, again, should have been charged with treason, but they charged him with something else. This comes from Associated Press, and it was on Q13Fox.com. Why a soldier accused of attempting to support the Islamic State group will plead guilty, his lawyers told the Associated Press on Tuesday. Bernie Bervar, one of the Sergeant First Class Ikaika Kang's attorneys, told the AP that Kang will plead guilty as charged in the incident, which accuses him of providing material aid to the terrorists. Kang is agreeing to a 25-year sentence for charges that could have put him in prison for life. Alexander Silver, an assistant federal defender representing Kang, also said the soldier has agreed to plead guilty. Court documents allege Kang provided classified material information to undercover agents whom he believed were part of the Islamic State group. Treason, that's what he's supposed to have been charged with. Kang is charged, scheduled to withdraw his not guilty plea Thursday. The hearing was moved from the afternoon to the morning because of concerns about a hurricane headed for Hawaii. A plea agreement hasn't been filed in court yet. A confident informant told the authorities Kang watched the videos depicting beheadings and other violence in his room for hours every day, according to court documents. Kang told the informant that if he became an Islamic State member, he would be a suicide bomber and attack Schofield Barracks, a sprawling army base outside of Honolulu. Kang began researching the Muslim religion in 2014, couldn't wait to move to the Middle East to join the cause, and was only in the military for a paycheck, the informant said. So this guy was in the military as a Muslim and was willing to kill those people that he was boarding with. That's scary to think about. That is mind-numbing when you think about it, that be willing to kill his brothers in arms. How many people want to work in that case? Are you willing to go to sleep when the guy next to you could hold these beliefs as a Muslim? One of their statements always is, we love death more than you love life. And you can find this historically. It's over and over you hear that one. So while they're saying that, it's not something I created, not something I made up. It's something they do. So it's something to think about. Mind-numbing stuff. Treason. How about this one? I found this article, and it still makes me kind of shiver. This is ABC.net out of Australia. This article is by Tasha Wibawa, written Tuesday. Indonesia's top Islamic body issues fatwa against measles vaccine, calling it religiously forbidden. Ooh, anybody want to give some? well, Indonesian peak Islamic body has issued a religious decree or fatwa declaring the rubella measles vaccine to be a haram or religiously forbidden. The Indonesian Ulama Council. So now we have reason right now not to allow any Muslim from Indonesia into this country as a health risk. This right here, this article is says that these people are a health risk to people in the United States. If they don't get this vaccination, why should we be allowing them to visit? Okay, Indonesia's peak Islamic body. Indonesia Ulama Council justified the ruling by claiming the vaccine contains traces of pork and human cells, which are banned in the Muslim religion. The organization is chaired by Ma'ruf Amin, who was recently controversial announced as Indonesian President Joko Widodo's running mate in next year's presidential election. However, the fatwa also states that the use of the product will be allowed for the time being due to the lack of viable alternatives. So, haram but not haram. He said the religious organization understood the dangers associated with not getting children immunized. However, CNN Indonesian reported that a number of towns have already suspended the vaccine before the MUI even announced their decision. Tim Lindsay, the director of the Center for Indonesian Law and the University of Melbourne, told the ABC that the fatwa would undoubtedly make accessing the vaccine more difficult in Indonesia. Fatwas are not legally binding on Indonesia, but however, declarations from the MUI are highly influential. If there's a MUI fatwa opposing it, that will be a real obstacle for public health efforts, Professor Lindsay said. So think about that. They're not going to get their children immunized because one guy is, one Muslim is making a statement, our council is making a statement against it. Something to think about. All right. Are you willing to have somebody from Indonesia now come here and talk to your children when they're not, are you willing to put your children's health at risk to allow them into your schools? I'm talking about people from Indonesia who don't get these vaccinations. In the United States, they're voluntary, but it's very, very rare to find somebody who is not immunized. And usually there's some kind of difficulty that arises because they don't immunize. So just to take another one. Here's another one. This one made me laugh. This is the local.se, which means it's from Sweden. This one, I don't know if it'll harm anybody, but you know, it's interesting. I said it made me laugh because it's not typical of what I'm reading out of Sweden. So this one, again, it surprised me and made me laugh. Swedish authorities monitor Islamic groups' campaign to stop Swedish Muslims voting. Wow. The Islamic group Hizb ut-Tahrir has launched a campaign under the slogan, "Use your voice, but not in the election," arguing that it is sinful for Muslims to take part in non-Islamic votes. Sweden's Civil Contingencies Agency, MSB, is monitoring the campaign and has informed the Swedish Election Authority. Swedish Election Authority, as well as producing a handbook for communicators in order to help them deal with campaigns urging non-voting. MSB is primarily monitoring foreign influence activity and actors. The Hizb ut-Tahrir propaganda activity was identified in our general monitoring. Christine Sinclair, a professor in Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Southern Denmark, said she told the local the group has carried out similar activities in other countries. They are well known in connection with Danish general elections. It's not a violent group, the professor added that they thrive on disagreement between majority non-Muslim and minority Muslim citizens. So they're telling Muslims not to vote. Who would that be good for? It's always good for the people that want the opposite. So, you know, it's something to think about. They're telling them not to vote, not to act as citizens of the country that they live in or chose to come to. I think there's some things to think about. There was an article this week in the Free Beacon. Two Iranian Americans were charged with spying. I hope people saw this. This is by Adam Credo, one of my favorite writers. So have to share this one out and putting it in the chat room as we speak. Now, this one was a surprise for me. I shouldn't be surprised. We've had too many Iranians in the White House lately, and now they're not there, but now that we have a new president, they're not in the White House. But again, I'm a child from the 80s, and I still remember the the Iranian Revolution and the taking of the hostages. I do remember that quite well. And so I probably could never trust an Iranian in a government position because of that. That's just me. But again, when you live through something like that, it's something to think about. Two Iranian Americans have been charged by the Trump administration with spying on Jewish and Israeli associated facilities in California on behalf of the hardline Iranian regime. The Department of Justice announced late Monday. The charges, first made public on Monday, are among the first by the Trump administration charging the Iranian spies of running operations on the Jewish and American communities in American soil. On American soil. The National Security Division is committed to protecting the United States from individuals within our country who unlawfully act on behalf of hostile foreign nations, Assistant Attorney General John Demir said in a statement. The two Iranian individuals, identified as Ahmad Riza Mohammadi Dostadar, a dual U.S. Iranian citizen, and Majid Ghorbani, an Iranian citizen and resident of California, with allegedly acting on behalf of the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran by conducting identifying information about American citizens and U.S. nationals who are members of the group of Mujahideen-e-Khalik. So, again, they're sharing information back to Iran about individuals here in the United States. That's a little scary when you think about that. I'm glad that somebody is taking an action. Will they be deported? I would say that needs to be done. Absolutely, absolutely needs to be done. Wow. And going down and down. How about this one? I know it's not on the topic of Islam or jihad, but it is on the topic of ICE. And I do want to point this article out because I think it's something we all need to think about. And if you're 50 years old or older, this article shouldn't be that big a surprise to you because you remember, you know, this happening not that long ago. Somebody else got caught. But ICE caught a Nazi this week, and they deported him. So Fred Lucas wrote in the Daily Signal, ICE has a history of arresting and deporting Nazis in America. This was published on August 21st. Amid a politically charged debate over its existence, Immigration and Customs Enforcement has removed war criminals, criminal Jacques Palige, marking the 68th deportation of a Nazi from the United States. On Monday, ICE arrested Palige, 95-year-old, a former labor camp guard, enforcing a 2004 court order the same day President Donald Trump praised ICE and Customs and Border officials at the White House ceremony. Specifically for ICE, created in 2003, this marks at least the fourth Nazi arrest, deporting Nazi concentration camp guards John Demjanjuk, Josias Kumpf, and soldier John Ivan Kalimon in 2011. Despite a court order for his deportation in 2004 under George Bush and, you know, then President Obama afterwards, nobody did it. And it took President Trump's administration to say, deport the guy. I mean, we gave the order in 2004. Why hasn't it been done? So, I mean, think about that. That's a long time. That's 16 years. He should have been deported 16 years ago. Information on Palij is on here. The former Nazi officer, he was arrested Monday in the Queens borough of New York City, born in part of Poland that is present-day Ukraine. Palij came to the United States in 49 and lied to immigration officials, claiming to have spent World War II working on a farm and in a factory. He gained citizenship in 57. He trained with the Nazis in 43 in German-occupied Poland. Court documents show those who trained him at the SS training camp in Towaniki, participating in executing Operation Reinhardt, a code name for the Third Reich's plan to murder Jews in Poland. Palij served as an armed guard at the adjacent Treblinka labor camp. By helping to prevent the escape of these prisoners during his service at Treblinka, Palij played an indispensable role in ensuring that they later met their tragic fate at the hand of the Nazis. On November 3rd of 43, about 6,000 Jewish people held at Treblinka labor camp were shot to death in one of the single largest massacres of the Holocaust. In 2001, after an investigation, Palij admitted his past with the Nazis to the Justice Department. In May of 2002, the Justice Department official of Special Investigations of the U.S. Attorney's Office filed a four-count complaint to revoke his citizenship based on his wartime activities. So this guy took part, it doesn't say he did, but part in the massacre of 6,000 Jews. Unbelievable. And I know nobody's complaining about him being deported. Why? I haven't heard anybody. I mean, the guy's 95. I think they would, well, maybe he's too old. No, they didn't defend him, did they? I haven't seen anybody stand up for his, for him. Scary, scary stuff. I do want to say thank you for everybody for listening. There is just so much more out there in news. So much more. I could go on another half hour to an hour with the amount of news that's been coming out. I do want to thank you all for listening. I'm running down to the last few seconds. And there is so much out there. I want to tell you, there are other shows out there, along with Annie's show, Southern Sense. You know, I want to listen to her. Tomorrow we have Dr. Carl Goldberg in the morning, The Logic of Islam. Saturday night we have Usama Dakdak. And Sunday we have Erica Kafiristan. Come take a listen. You can watch him on Facebook as well. He's been getting a lot of listeners through his advertising. And then come back on Monday, we have Alan Vito, the Real Radio Man, doing Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesday, we have Kel Fritzy's Infidels Are Watching, the beautiful Kel Fritzy. And I believe she's on vacation this week going on. I think she covered for somebody else this week too, though. While she was, and going on, we have if you come back Wednesday, we have our new host. Come take a listen. Our new host, John, is outstanding, and he brings some real insight on foreign affairs. And you definitely want to listen to the Wednesday show. And then come back next Thursday. I will be here. I want to, again, thank you all for listening. It's been an honor to have the opportunity to share with you guys. And I just want to say, enjoy the red, white, and blue.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. I'll brought to you courtesy of